The first person on the speaker's list is Jaida Placid, who's a young Haitian author. Jaida Placid was born in New York City and began writing at the age of 12, when she wrote a play for a sixth grade class to perform. English was not always her first language, and she's born to immigrant parents and spent her early childhood in Haiti. Creole and French were the languages she was familiar with when she was young. Reading not only became an important learning tool for Jaida Placid, but it also laid the foundation for a life filled and surrounded by books. The same spark she felt when she opened and learned her first ABC book is the same spark she carries with her in her present position as an assistant editor with a major children's book publisher. Please help me welcome Jaida Placid.
I'd like to say good evening, bonsoir, buenas noches to everyone. It's really a great honor for me to be part of this distinguished panel, and I'd like to thank Mary Zafranik and her organization and Teachers College in Columbia for holding this very, very, very important event. I'd like to begin just to read a few pages from the book. It's called Fresh Girl, and it was published last year. And then I'll talk a little bit about how the book came about, why I wrote it, and all that stuff. But just to give you a little background on Fresh Girl, it's a young adult novel about a 14-year-old Haitian-American girl growing up in Brooklyn and what she has to go through to adjust to the American society. So I'll begin at the beginning, chapter one, and I'll read like three different pages from three different parts from the beginning. Chapter 1. Do you smell something, Marty? Jillian Hunter sits across from me, sniffing the air. We're in English class, waiting for the teacher to come. No, I say, praying that no one thinks it's me. I made sure I washed my underarms three times before I left my house this morning. I don't smell anything. Oh, no, my accent. You don't smell anything. This comes from Ike, one aisle over, breathing fire on everyone's back. Use one dumb island girl. When you gonna learn how to be talking English right? I open my English writing notebook, Malice. In stories my grandmother used to tell me, Malice is the clever one who always gets away with his tricks. I write, if I were God for one day, I would never let Ike be born. I underline never twice. Then I notice Pierre Lebal, several desks in front of me, secretly eating a bag of onion cheese potato chips. Pierre again, always making the rest of us Haitians look bad with her mountain folk ways. So, Frenchy, Ike jumps in my face. You got HBO today, huh? You got Haitian body odor today? Everyone's looking at me, including Santos Amarez and the Mildred Rodriguez, the best-looking people in all of Flatbush, Brooklyn. The Mildred Rodriguez and some girls around her giggle, giggle, giggle like cartoon witches. My heart is thumping in my throat. Jaleen speaks up for me. Leave her alone, Isaac. My heart slides back in its place. Who are you, her mama, he asks. If I was, I'd knock your nappy head back into the third grade. Now Jaleen's accent comes out, but hers is American and Southern and angry. Ike smiles and leans back as if surprised. Calm down, girl. No one wanna fight. I'm just playing. You don't mind, right, Marty? Do crocodiles bite? But I shake my head no. I look at Santos and breathe out. He's staring back at me, but I can't tell if he's with Ike or Jaleen. Mrs. Orlando finally rushes in. So sorry to be late, but everybody better quiet down or there'll be plenty for you to write about. The class gets quiet real quick. I have your exams back from the first part of To Kill a Mockingbird. She holds up the papers. Many of you have not done your reading, which explains your very creative answers. So at the end of this period, you're getting a makeup test. The class groans. For those of you who did well, this will be extra credit. Marty, Mrs. Orlando is smiling at me. You have the highest score again. Will you please hand these out? I slowly get up from my seat and take the papers. As Mrs. Orlando writes notes on the board, I give out the exams. Pierre gets a 79, Jaleen a 72, Santos and Mildred both get 68s, Ike gets an 83, and I get 100. I accidentally hand Ike, Santos, and the Mildred Rodriguez my paper. The dumb island girl writes again. Mardi, Mardi de Ravine. In French, my name means Tuesday, the Mardi of the Ravine, the de Ravine. My mom named me Mardi because I was born on a Tuesday. Thank God it wasn't a Wednesday because then my name would have been Mercredi. In English, it sounds like a pain reliever. I was born in New York City, the first one of my family to be a natural citizen. Sometimes my mother and father call me Daniela, the last one, or the one who was born here, as if those few words could sum me up when they introduced me. They had me right after they came to New York looking for work, and when I was 4 years old, they sent me to Haiti to live with Grand-Mère Ada, my father's mother. That was when both my mother and father started working double shifts, and there was no one to look after me anymore. Grand-Mère Ada told them to send me to her. She had a big house in Port-au-Prince and was also looking after my sister Serena, who was 8 at the time. Serena was born in Port-au-Prince, and we had never met. I wasn't exactly dying to meet her either. One morning, I woke up in New York, and Mama's sausage and eggs were burning, and she was standing right in front of the stove, too. Mama and Papa both kept telling me I was going on a trip. Yeah, Disneyland. No. The park with water in it inside, I asked. No. Puppy in the window, I asked. No. They were extra nice to me that morning. My father let me sit on his lap to eat my breakfast. He kept saying how smart I was and how I would do well in something I'd be doing a long way from that day. My mother let me brush her hair and didn't snatch the brush from me when I accidentally hit her on the head with it. She kind of smiled and touched my chin. I thought I was in heaven. Then we went to the airport. When it was time to get on the plane, I reached for my mother, but she put two pictures in my hand, one of her and my father, the other of this old woman who was my grandmother. I knew something was up when they both kissed me. Why would they do that if we were going to be together? Skip ahead a bit. Okay, this is the beginning of chapter 2. I swing open the door to my house, a 2-bedroom apartment on Newkirk Avenue. Today was a good day. I got 100 on the English test, and Ike didn't bust his way into the bathroom. It's TGIN. Thank God Ike's nowhere. I walk to the kitchen and find Grand-Mère Ada sitting at the table with a wooden mortar and pestle in her lap. My mother is at the sink seasoning meat. Bonsoir, Grand-Mère. Hi, Mama. I greet them. Want me to pound the spices? I ask in Creole, a mix of French and other languages. I speak Creole with all the adults in my house. When they try to speak English, it's always broken and with an accent. Ah, now you ask, my grandmother says. I'm done and my arm's about to fall off. You know what happened to me today, I smile. I got 100 on my English test. Bravo, c'est bon, keep going, my grandmother says. Then in English, keep going. Yes, that is good, very good, my mother says. Take your test on the front door. Ah, all those years she and Serena spent with me, I made sure they took their schoolwork seriously, says Grand-Mère. I don't raise lazy children. She gets up and hands my mother the mortar and the crushed spices, then picks up a bowl of cut coconut and begins grating it. Oh good, she's going to make coconut tablette. She makes that and other sweets to sell by the train station. I see her there sometimes when I'm walking home from school. She's ready to run if she sees a police car because she doesn't have a permit to sell. In Haiti, Grand-Mère owned and managed a grocery store, but she can't even sell a bag of popcorn here. She and my Aunt Widza came to New York about 8 months ago because things in Haiti were getting worse with all the killings and shootings. My Uncle Perrin decided to stay and look after the house, even though Grand-Mère didn't want him to. That uncle almost got us all killed with his big mouth. We don't know where he is now. Is there a wedding, Mama? I asked. There are huge buckets of meat on the kitchen counters. She worked at this cosmetic factory as long as I've been alive, but since it closed down, people have been hiring her to cook for their parties. They know she's good and can stretch a meal like that story in the Bible, the one about feeding thousands of people with one fish and a piece of bread. Clara Metro is marrying George Etienne, my mother answers. She rubs and rubs each piece of meat with lemon and sour oranges. The fat on her arm jiggles. Ah, says Grand-Mère, her arm also jiggles with every grate. George Etienne is marrying that Clara Mitchell. He's just a boy. This will be Clara's third husband, and they're getting married in a church? Of course, my mother says. You know how Clara likes to show off. The priest won't marry them on the altar itself because Clara's been divorced. On or off the altar, she just wants to get married in a church because her last two marriages were at City Hall. Imagine you're 49 with 5 children and marrying a young man enough to be your son. Is that me? People who aren't afraid of tripotai will do anything, says my grandmother. It's good Clara Metro isn't afraid of gossip, I say. Both my ma and grandma look at me. What do you mean it's good, says grandma? Is it good to have 5 children with 5 different men? What does Marty know, mama says, returning to her meat. Children have 3 responsibilities, eat, sleep, and school. I should have just kept my mouth shut. They always think I don't know anything. I know a lot of things. Did they ever get 100 on a test, or jump double dutch for 6 minutes straight, or know the best places to hide? I go over to the stove and lift the lids of pots and pans. One pot has codfish and onions, the other boiled green plantains, and the other rice with red kidney beans, the size of marbles. I move to the refrigerator and take out a bottle of West Indian fruit soda. Hey, put that back, Mama says. You haven't eaten. You can take mine, Gomez says, pointing to a half full glass on the table. I suck my teeth. What? Mama says, what was that? What? Did you just chipe at me and your grandmother? No, I didn't think she would hear me. My mother stops and points at me. Listen, Marty, watch your bones with me. Vizzle. I put the soda back and keep myself from slamming the refrigerator door shut. I leave the kitchen and go past the front door, not stopping to put up my perfect English paper. It would have gone next to a picture of Serena and her beauty award certificate and below Aunt Wiz's American dollar, the first money she made in this country. It was Aunt Wiz's ideas to tape our achievements on the front door, so each day when we leave the house, we know what we're capable of. And I just have one more page. And this is Marty at school in her cafeteria. I look around the cafeteria. Everyone is having a good time eating. What I think? I think maybe there's something in the food that makes these people happy at lunchtime. V. Mildred Rodriguez is surrounded, as usual, by all the other popular kids in the school. None as pretty as her. She's got long, thick black hair that comes down to her waist and has hazel eyes like Santos. So Santos likes pretty girls? What for doesn't? Me standing to Mildred is like a city pigeon standing next to a swan that just flew in from heaven. The only words she's ever said to me are, hey, you little FOB, meaning fresh off the boat, a refugee. That was when I first started school here, and it was all over the news that Haitians were taking boats like crazy out of Haiti, taking boats going wherever. I don't think FOB fits me because I came here by plane, not boat. And when I got off the plane, I wasn't fresh either. Pierre Lebal waves at me from another corner of the cafeteria. That boy is sitting next to her, her cousin or something, the one I saw her playing basketball with in the courtyard. What's his name again? Anyway, I wave back, praying she and her doofy friends don't come over. If I look like I just stepped off the boat, Pierre and her friends look like they never got off. And she's been here since she was 4. Pierre and I used to be good friends, mostly because we lived in the same building and our fathers were friends. I used to watch Saturday morning cartoons at her house because she had a TV in her room. When I first came to Brooklyn, she was the one who showed me around the neighborhood and told me the best places to buy good cheap candy. She showed me shortcuts from home to anywhere and told me the streets and alleys to stay away from, places where bums peed and where people sold and smoked crack. I guess she would have become my best friend, except she was always asking me about Haiti. What's it like there? Is it still sunny? Did I go to the beaches a lot? Pierre hadn't been there in a long time. I was trying to get rid of Haiti in my mind, and she kept wanting to go there, sucking my memory like hard candy. Thank you. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about how I came to write Fresh Girl and the motivating force behind it. The idea came to me back in 1991 when the coup d'etat happened with Ali Steed. And there were many, many horrible stories I heard, lots of you, the world heard, about the violence, the killings, the sexual abuse against women and children. And it was really the first time that me being in New York safe and protected. I was affected by it. I don't think any other thing that has that happened in Haiti since then had affected me so much. So when I heard about all the stories and was moved by it, I asked myself, how does one survive something like that? When you see your family members killed in front of you, if you're abused, raped, stabbed, what have you, how do you begin to put the pieces back together? And so it was, and I said to myself, somebody should write a story about that someday. So I filed it in the back of my head, and fast forward 3-4 years, I sat down and wrote like a synopsis to Fresh Girl. And I have to say, at the beginning of the, when I started writing Fresh Girl, it was going to be about a young girl who was at 12. In this book, she's 14 years old, that she was just didn't want to be Haitian. She wanted to be an American. That was my focus point. But then I, later on, as I went deeper and deeper into her character, I decided that it's just a part of her. And I decided that that story that I had from 1991, to put the two together. So Mardi's story is that she left Haiti because of the coup. She wasn't supposed to be in this country, so she was here prematurely. And now she has to deal with not only what happened in Haiti, but also to move forward in life in America, and also adjust to living with her parents that she hasn't lived with since she was a little girl. So, but also growing up myself, Mardi's story is very typical of a lot of people who are born here and then sent back to their parents' country and then come back again. Because that was also the way it happened to me. I was born in New York when I was about a year and a half old. My parents sent me to Haiti to my aunt's house, and I didn't come back until about 4 or 5, 5, 6 years old. So I was in Mardi's position, learning English, trying to figure out what everything was and what it meant to be Haitian in American society. And also, I live on the Upper West Side. To be Haitian in a community that didn't have a large Haitian community, it's not like I grew up in Brooklyn where when you go out, it's very apparent. So adjustment was big, but you know, like Mardi, sometimes it was very, especially in the 80s, it was very hard to be who you were and not get teased for it. But, you know, as we get older, I guess we learn to look into ourselves and love who we are. And I think that's what carries us to the next level. And I think it's especially important for children to learn that message at a very young age and not wait till they're in college to finally figure out, hey, I'm pretty cool, you know? I mean, I would like for them to get that when they're like 3, 2 in the womb, that they are cool. So thank you very much.
There will be spaces after the panel to have your questions for Jaya and others.